Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
A vast land of extremes, endless deserts that stretch beyond the horizon. Ancient forests whispering forgotten stories. Towns built on secrets older than the nation itself. Out here, the silence can be deafening, and the night hides more than just stars. It hides legends. Shadows that linger long after the sun has set. Mysteries woven into the very soil. This is Arcana Australis. A journey deep into the strange and the unknown. Each episode, we explore the forgotten folklore, unsolved crimes, and eerie encounters that shape the dark heart of the southern land. There's a place in western Queensland where the horizon stretches so far, it feels like the sky might fold in on itself. A place of searing heat, red earth, and long silences that echo louder than any city street. It's the kind of place that seems empty, but isn't. Out here, beneath a sky spangled with stars, something strange happens. Something no one can quite explain. They call them the Min Min Lights. The first widely recorded encounter with the Min Min Lights happened near the remote outback town of Boulia in western Queensland in the year 1918. The air was still, the horizon stretched wide and empty. A harsh, endless landscape, carved by the wind and bleached by the sun. A lone stockman was making his way across the Channel Country, a place where desert and floodplain collide, threading a trail through the dust and the salt bush beneath a moonless sky. It was then, without warning, that he saw it. A strange light rose from the scrub near the ruins of the old Min Min Hotel, a place already cloaked in dark history. The hotel had burned down some years before, under mysterious circumstances. Some said it had been struck by lightning. Others whispered of foul play, of drunken brawls gone wrong, of lives lost in the blaze. Patrons and drifters, whose names were never written down, only spoken of in hushed tones. The building itself had stood alone on the track, surrounded by nothing but scrub and dust. After the fire, only scorched stone foundations and the blackened skeleton of a chimney remained. Some claimed the area was cursed. Others swore they felt eyes on them when they passed it. Now the stockman watched as a ball of light rose from the very spot where the hotel once stood. It hovered, glowing softly, shifting in color from white to pale green to a faint ghostly blue. At first, he thought it might be a lantern or some kind of trick of the eye. But then, it began to move, not away from him, but toward him. It followed him, slowly at first, then faster, keeping perfect pace with his horse, no matter how fast he rode. He kicked his mount into a gallop. The wind roared in his ears, dust billowed beneath the hooves, but the light remained, gliding silently through the air beside him, like a silent sentinel. For kilometers, it trailed him, unwavering, unblinking. It never came close enough to touch. Never made a sound, but it held its distance like it knew the land better than any man ever could. And then, as he reached the edge of Boulia and passed beneath the town's flickering gas street lamps, the light vanished, snuffed out like a candle in the dark. The stockman told his story to anyone who would listen. He was shaken, not by superstition, but by the certainty that he had seen something he could not explain. At first, the tale was met with skepticism. Locals joked it was just the grog talking. Others blamed heatstroke or tired eyes playing tricks after a long day in the saddle. But the thing was, this wasn't the first sighting, and it wouldn't be the last. In the weeks that followed, others began to come forward, quietly at first, reluctant to be laughed at. But the stories began to echo the same patterns. travellers, drovers, and bushmen all spoke of lights that appeared suddenly, hovered just above the ground, or darted through the air with unnatural grace. Some said they saw them dancing along ridgelines, or skimming silently over the Spinifex plains. Others told of lights that glowed like lanterns, but never cast a shadow. Lights that blinked out the moment someone approached, as if teasing the observer, always distant, always watching, always just out of reach. As word spread, fear gave way to fascination. Some believed they were ghost lights, the spirits of those who died in the Min Min Hotel, or even the dead from an unmarked graveyard that locals claimed once lay near the site, lost to time and erosion. Others believed they were warnings, omens that appear to the doomed, or those who strayed too far from the beaten track. And so, the legend of the Min Min Light began to take form, not from myth, but from memory. Rooted in a single encounter on a lonely night in 1918, it grew with every retelling, a flicker in the darkness that refused to fade. The Min Min Hotel itself, the site of the first reported sighting, carries a shadowed history all of its own. Even before the light appeared, the hotel had its reputation. Built in the late 1800s, during a time when the Queensland outback was still being carved into cattle routes and frontier towns, it served as a rough stopover for drovers, stockmen, and fortune seekers moving cattle across the inland. It wasn't a place for comfort. It was a place of necessity, of shelter, grog, and temporary escape from the relentless harshness of the land. From the outside, the Min Min Hotel was unremarkable. A simple building with a tin roof, a long veranda, and weathered walls battered by dust storms and heat. But inside, it was said to be a place of laughter, violence, and ghosts. It was known as a hard place, full of hard men, the kind who carried their pay in their boots and settled disputes with fists or knives. Liquor flowed freely, and tempers ran hot. Some nights ended in music and dancing. Others ended in silence, broken bottles, and blood on the floorboards. The stories began early. Whispers of a man who vanished after a card game turned sour. A woman, said to be a travelling entertainer, who checked in one night and was never seen again. Brawls that spilled out into the dust, ending with someone left behind, unmoving. Disputes over cattle, stolen horses, or unpaid debts that turned violent. Police were called, but rarely came quickly enough. And in some cases, never at all. These weren't crimes solved in courtrooms. They were stories passed from mouth to mouth, often around campfires or over another drink. Then came the fire. It happened one hot night, sometime after midnight. No one agrees on the exact year. Records from that time are scarce, and official documents are missing or incomplete. Some say it was an accident, a candle kicked over in a drunken stumble. Others believe it was deliberate, the result of a vendetta, revenge for a wrong, never spoken aloud. There were rumors of arson, of locked doors, and panicked screams. Some said someone had poured kerosene around the building, trapping those inside. Others claimed the fire moved too fast, too deliberately, for it to be chance. In the end, all that remained were charred beams, scorched stones, and the blackened chimney stack that still juts up like a broken tooth from the dirt. Several people were said to have perished in the blaze, though no one knows how many. The dead weren't always recorded out there. If you were passing through, you might as well have never existed. A body unclaimed was just another secret the desert could keep. Even before the flames consumed the building, there had been whispers of cold spots in the halls, of doors that opened on their own, of footsteps on the veranda long after the last drink had been poured. Some stockmen refused to sleep inside. Some left in the middle of the night, riding hard without explanation. And nearby, almost forgotten, lies something even older, an unmarked graveyard, tucked behind a slight rise in the land, obscured now by wild scrub, saltbush, and thyme. No signs remain, no fence or marker, just a scattering of uneven stones and sunken ground, as if the earth itself has tried to swallow the memory of those buried there. Locals believe it predates the hotel, a burial ground for early settlers, or perhaps indigenous remains displaced during the brutal march of colonization. Others say the graves belong to victims of violence from the hotel, those whose deaths were never acknowledged officially. A few even whisper that bodies from the fire were quietly buried there, dumped into the ground beneath the moonlight to avoid questions or scandal. It's said the ground there is unsettled, that animals avoid it, and that compasses spin strangely when brought too close. Some claim they've seen shapes moving among the stones at night, or heard faint cries on the wind that don't seem to come from anywhere. For many in Boulia and beyond, the Min Min light is not just a strange phenomenon. It's a manifestation of something deeper, a warning, a presence, a reflection of the unfinished business that lingers in the dirt and the bones beneath it. Theories abound. Some say the lights are the restless spirits of those who died in the fire, souls trapped in the moment of their death, wandering the plains in search of peace. Others believe they come from the forgotten graveyard, stirred by some unseen force, a reminder that the past never stays buried for long, and a few think the lights are drawn to the site for reasons no one can truly understand, as if something about that patch of scorched earth still hums with energy, a magnet for the unexplained. Whatever the truth, the Min Min Hotel is long gone, but its shadow remains, etched into the landscape, stitched into local memory, and dancing still across the plains in the form of flickering lights that refuse to be explained, extinguished, or ignored. And the stories didn't end in the early 20th century. If anything, they've become more persistent, evolving with the land, adapting to the times, but never fading away. The Min Min lights continue to appear, sometimes to travelers just passing through, sometimes to locals who've lived in the outback their entire lives and have learned not to speak too loudly about what they've seen. As recently as 2020, new sightings were reported near Boulia, the unofficial heartland of Min Min country. One such report came from a man in his late 60s, a self-described grey nomad from Victoria, travelling solo across the outback in a decked-out camper van. He'd been keeping to himself, chasing quiet sunsets and remote tracks as part of his retirement. No alcohol, no drugs, just the silence of the desert and the rhythm of the road. He'd set up camp just outside Boulia, near an old cattle trail. It was a still, windless night, the kind that hangs over the land, like a heavy cloth. The only sound was the hum of insects and the occasional rustle of dry grass in the breeze. Then, just after 11 p.m, he noticed a strange glow on the horizon. He first thought it might be headlights, but it was too far off the road. Then he thought it could be a drone, but the movement was too organic, fluttering, almost like it was breathing. He described it later as a glowing ball, yellow and pulsing, about the size of a football. It hovered just above the spin effects, his light not casting outward like a torch or lantern, but glowing from within, like some internal fire. The man stood still, stunned as the orb began to move toward him. Not fast, but with intent. It glided low, humming faintly, like the vibration of distant bees. It grew brighter the closer it came, until the man could make out what looked like a shimmering halo, almost like heat haze, surrounding the sphere. Then, just as it approached the edge of his camp, it vanished. No sound, no wind, just gone, like it had blinked out of reality. He didn't sleep that night. He wasn't drunk. He wasn't hallucinating. He was terrified. The next morning, he packed up and drove straight into town, where he told his story at the Boulia Visitor Information Center. The staff there didn't laugh. They didn't call him crazy. Instead, they offered him a cup of tea and calmly said, "You've seen the light." Later, he would learn that other travelers had reported similar sightings over the past few years. Glowing orbs, strange hums, floating lights that appeared to follow vehicles for miles or hover outside tents in the middle of the night. Some flickered like flame, others darted like insects, but the feeling they left behind was always the same. Disquiet, like being watched, like something not entirely of this world had taken an interest in them. And these modern sightings haven't been confined to one-off experiences. In 2017, a couple from South Australia travelling along the Donoghue Highway toward Boulia reported a pair of lights that hovered beside their four-wheel drive for nearly 15 minutes, pacing them through the desert, never gaining or falling behind. At one point, the woman said, the lights swooped across their windscreen in tandem, as if playing with them or warning them. They stopped the car, stepped out, and the lights vanished into the stars above, they left without camping. In 2019, a cattle truck driver reported being tailed by a light for over an hour while hauling livestock at night. He radioed other drivers on the UHF. No one else saw it. When he tried to stop and get a photo, the light flared suddenly, as bright as a spotlight, and then disappeared behind a ridge. "I don't spook easy," he later told a local station, "but I drove the next 100 km with my eyes in the mirror. These are not people prone to fantasy. These are not thrill-seeking paranormal investigators. These are regular Australians. Stockmen, retirees, solo campers, long-haul drivers. People who've lived most of their lives under open skies and know the difference between a shooting star and something that shouldn't be there. And still, their stories are met with the same response, a quiet nod, a subtle warning not to follow the light, and the sense that out here, some things are better left unchased." So what are they? That's the question that lingers, like a chill in the back of the throat, the one that skeptics, scientists, and locals alike have wrestled with for over a century. If these lights are real, and there are simply too many accounts, too many credible witnesses to dismiss them outright, then what causes them? Science, of course, has theories. One of the most commonly cited explanations is a phenomenon known as Fata Morgana, a complex form of superior mirage, where layers of hot and cold air near the horizon bend and refract light in bizarre and often unsettling ways. Under certain conditions, it can make distant objects float, stretch, or shimmer. In some rare cases, it can even duplicate lights from beyond the horizon, headlights, campfires, stars, and project them like ghostly echoes above the ground. It's a tidy explanation, elegant even, but it fails to account for key details. Fata Morgana is passive, a visual distortion. The Min Min lights are not. They move with intent. They hover. They change direction. They follow. They respond to human presence. They've been reported to chase people, to dart ahead of vehicles, to drift just out of reach, like something alive. A mirage doesn't do that. Another popular theory is bioluminescence, the idea that the lights may be caused by phosphorescent decay in plant matter or swamp gases like methane igniting in the air. This explanation is sometimes linked to similar phenomena like will-o'-the-wisps in Europe, long attributed to glowing marsh gases, but Western Queensland is dry, vast, arid. There are few swamps and little organic matter in the locations where these sightings occur. Red earth, rocky ground, open plains. Then there's the theory of piezoelectricity, the idea that tectonic stress on quartz-rich rock beneath the earth could produce electrical discharges that manifest as lights. The ground in some parts of outback Queensland is heavy in quartz, and it's true that under pressure, quartz can produce small bursts of electrical energy. In theory, seismic activity could produce a kind of earthlight, like natural plasma floating above the ground. But even among geologists, this theory remains fringe, speculative. There's no solid proof that piezoelectric discharges can create glowing orbs that follow people across the desert. Some have even suggested ball lightning, a rare and still poorly understood atmospheric phenomenon in which glowing spheres of electricity are generated during storms. But Min Min sightings rarely coincide with storm conditions. In fact, most occur on calm, clear nights, when the desert is still and the sky is crystalline. Each of these explanations offers a piece of the puzzle, but none of them account for everything. They don't explain the consistency of the reports, across generations, across cultures, across technology shifts. They don't explain why the lights seem to respond to movement, why they appear to watch, why they disappear just as suddenly as they arrive, leaving behind a creeping sense of unease that can linger for days. And then there are the things that people don't talk about as openly. The missing time. The dead livestock found near places where lights have been seen. The shadows in the light, glimpsed for a second. Too fast to name. Too strange to forget. Those who've seen them up close describe a feeling of being examined, as though the lights are not just random flashes of energy, but something with curiosity. Or worse, intent. There's an old saying among the graziers in Western Queensland, you don't chase the light, and you don't let it chase you. Because no matter what science tries to explain, the truth out there is older than theory, older than names, and maybe not meant to be understood. Then there's the cultural dimension. Long before European settlers first rode into the harsh expanses of Western Queensland, the indigenous peoples of the region, particularly the Pita Pita people, custodians of this land for tens of thousands of years, told stories of mysterious lights moving silently across the landscape. These lights were not mere curiosities or tales spun to entertain children around the campfire. They were warnings, signs with deep spiritual significance, woven into the fabric of dreaming stories and sacred lore. To the Pita Pita and neighbouring Aboriginal groups such as the Yalu Yandi and Wankanguru, these lights represented more than flickers of phosphorescence or natural phenomena. They were manifestations of ancestral beings, protectors and punishers, who watched over the land and its people. These beings maintained the balance between humans, animals and the environment, guardians of laws older than memory. In some dreaming narratives, the lights acted as harbingers, ominous signs that foretold danger, death or the consequences of disrespecting sacred country, to venture into certain places uninvited or to disturb the land without proper ceremony was to risk angering these spirits. The lights might appear then, moving like silent sentinels, as a reminder to tread carefully and honour ancient customs. These stories were never simply folklore in the Western sense, passed down as quaint or mythical tales. They were part of a living, spiritual relationship with country, a bond that defines identity, lore and survival. The lights were real, sacred, and not to be trifled with. Elders speak of them with solemnity, emphasizing respect and caution. In many Aboriginal worldviews, the land is alive, imbued with spirit and consciousness. The Min Min lights are part of this continuum, blending physical reality and spiritual presence in a way that challenges Western categories of natural and supernatural. This perspective adds profound weight to any attempt to explain the lights as mere optical illusions or scientific anomalies, because in many ways, the Min Min lights are not just a trick of the eye or a natural phenomenon shaped by heat and atmosphere. They are part of the landscape itself, inseparable from the cultural, historical, and spiritual narratives that have shaped this land for millennia. To understand the Min Min lights fully then is to understand the land as a living story, one where belief, memory, and environment come together, flickering and shifting like the lights themselves. In 2001, the small town of Boulia embraced its enigmatic reputation by opening the Min Min Encounter Center, a unique tourist attraction designed to bring the legend to life through a blend of robotics, storytelling, and immersive technology. Visitors can walk through recreated outback settings, watch simulated light shows that mimic the elusive glow, and hear first-hand accounts woven into compelling narratives. The center is charming in its own right, a curious blend of science and folklore, education and entertainment. It invites guests to step into the mystery, to feel the dusty wind on their face and glimpse the flicker of the light just beyond the campfire's glow. For those unfamiliar with the outback, it offers a fascinating introduction to a phenomenon that has confounded generations. But for locals, those who have lived in the shadow of the Min Min lights, who have heard the stories from their grandparents, or who have glimpsed the lights themselves on a lonely road, the center's spectacle is something different. It's a performance, a reenactment, a way to package a mystery into neat, consumable pieces. The real Min Min lights, they say, don't play to an audience. They don't appear on demand, and they certainly don't perform on a schedule. They are unpredictable, silent and fleeting. They are not here for our curiosity or comfort. They remain stubbornly elusive, a reminder that some mysteries belong to the land itself and cannot be owned or replicated. And so, while the Min Min Encounter Center stands as a beacon of local pride and intrigue, the true lights continue to flicker on their own terms, far beyond the reach of robotics and storytelling, waiting in the vast, unyielding expanse of the outback. Music transitions to quiet, uneasy ambience. Many of the accounts of the Min Min lights come from people who find themselves alone in the vastness of the bush, hikers making their way along winding dirt tracks, drovers guiding cattle under endless skies, late night drivers rolling down empty roads, the only light their headlights cutting through the blackness. These are people already on the edge, physically isolated and often psychologically raw from the endless solitude. Out there, beyond the reach of cell signals, far from the hum of cities, the veil between worlds feels thinner. The silence is so complete, it becomes a presence in itself. And in that silence, maybe what they saw wasn't new at all. Perhaps the lights have always been there, flickering just beyond our notice, waiting for those who dare to look closely, long enough. But some of these stories are darker. One such tale, whispered quietly and rarely told, dates back to the 1930s near Winton, another dusty outback town. A young girl, no more than 10 years old, vanished without a trace. Her parents said she had been chasing a bright white ball, hovering just above the ground. Drawn by its strange, mesmerizing glow, they found her footprints leading out into the scrub, and then stopping abruptly. No signs of a struggle, no broken branches, no clue where she had gone. Search parties scoured the land for weeks, but she was never found. Some say she walked into another world that night. Others believe the light took her, or perhaps she was simply lost to the unforgiving desert. These are not stories told lightly. If you ask around town, you might get a nervous chuckle or a dismissive shrug. But if you seek out someone old enough, a lifelong resident, a stockman who spent decades riding these tracks, you'll notice their eyes change. The easy humor disappears, replaced by a seriousness that hangs heavy in the air. Their voice drops to a whisper as they share a warning, passed down through generations. If you see the light, don't follow it. It's advice wrapped in fear and respect, because in this land, some mysteries don't want to be solved. Some paths are best left untaken. Some mysteries seem to call out for answers, begging to be unraveled and understood. Others, however, cling stubbornly to their secrets, wrapped in shadow and silence, defying every attempt to bring them into the light. The Min Min Lights are not interested in headlines or fame. They do not pause for cameras or eager witnesses. They refuse to be captured or explained on our terms. They simply, Zaesera, ancient and elusive, flickering in and out of sight like whispers on the wind. And tonight, as the sun sinks slowly behind the golden Mitchell grass plains, painting the horizon in bruised purples and fiery oranges, the vast sky will deepen into a blanket of stars, cold, distant, infinite. Maybe, just maybe, somewhere out there, far beyond the town and the roads, the Min Min Lights will rise once again, flickering softly, drifting silently, waiting. Thank you for joining Arcana Australis, where Australia's hidden stories come to light. If this episode resonated with you, a rating or review would be greatly appreciated. We'll return soon with more secrets waiting in the shadows.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.